and welcome back to A Place in the Conversation. My name is Dan Neiswanger. I'm the spiritual formation catalyst for A Place in the Conversation. And I'm here with my good friend, Nick. Nick, why don't you say hello?
Hi, I'm Nick Everhart. I'm a good friend of Dan's, as he said. I knew him first as the pastor of First Baptist Church. And we've had a lot of interesting conversations together.
Yeah, and that is truth, and we're going to have another one today here, I hope. So what is, not I hope, we're going to. And so the one of the things that we're going to do is today is I'm going to share a little bit of a meditation. I receive in the mail every single morning a meditation from Richard Rohr. And it is absolutely fantastic and comes for the Center for Action and Contemplation, which he started and is a part of. There'll be a link connected in the write-up for the podcast where you can go and you can sign up for these meditations. They're really good. Nick and I received them, and it's not uncommon for me to email Nick and say, hey, did you see today's meditation? Or for Nick to email me and say, hey, did you see today's meditation? And we really kind of connect with some of the writings of Richard Rohr. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to share a bit of one of his recent meditations, and then we're just going to talk about how it impacts us and what we think is important in it. So this is the words of Richard Rohr. The contemplative responds to the divine in everyone. God wills the care of the poor as well as the reward of the rich. So therefore must the true contemplative. God wills the end of oppressors who stand with the heel and the neck of the weak, so therefore does the true contemplative. God wills the liberation of all human beings, so therefore must the true contemplative. God desires the dignity and full development of all human beings, thus God takes the side of the defenseless. And thus, therefore, must the true contemplative. Otherwise, that contemplation is not real, cannot be real, will never be real, because to contemplate the God of justice is to be committed to justice. The true contemplative, the truly spiritual person, then must do justice, must speak justice, must insist on justice, and they do, and they always have, and they are. So Nick, those are that's the part of that meditation that Richard Rohr shares as he talks about the way that the contemplative thinks about issues of justice and everything. What jumps out at you as you listen to those words?
Okay, well, a couple of things, and this could take us off in all different directions, but one of the earlier things he said was about the divine being in all people. And I guess I would take that even a step further. One of my beliefs is that God is in all things, okay, not just in all people. And I also, as a consequence of that, I believe that everything is connected. And I think that that's sort of part of that is related to my background as a biologist. It's a sort of ecological principle that everything, every living thing is connected. But I think it's even goes beyond that. Then the other thing that I really connect to is this idea of contemplations. And which basically I believe is sort of sitting in silence, because I believe that at our core, it is silent. And perhaps you could say that's where God is. But when we are praying or sitting in silence, in contemplation, we are connected to that God that is within us. And Maybe that's enough. Just stop there. And
see no, what, I think it's really good, Nick. You, okay. You've got you're helping us get our conversation going. And I think that there's it's no secret, right? That in our world today, there's so much noise. You know, there's so much noise and there's so much distraction. There's so much busyness that it's hard for us as people to be connected to the spiritual. It's hard for us to connect to that part of our being. And the idea of being still and being quiet, and sensing, discerning, the movement of the Spirit, of God in our lives at all, it becomes difficult to do because we're just so distracted by the noise that surrounds us all the time, or that list of things that we feel like we have to accomplish, like what we find value in doing, and accomplishing things and getting things checked off a to-do list. And if we're not doing, we somehow struggle to find value in who we are, or at least some of us do. And so we wrestle with this, with the idea of taking some time to sit and be still and be quiet. It's very easy for us to fall into the trap of looking at that as a waste of time. You've had a lot of experience with contemplation. And why don't you share a little bit about that? How has that played an important role in your life?
So I guess I would not use the term contemplation, though it's probably very much the same thing. But I got interested in Buddhism a while ago, and in meditation. In meditation, you are sitting in silence, you're trying to stop the interruptions of your crazy thoughts going off in all different directions. So I was very interested in Buddhism and sort of ending suffering. And I also read the works and studied with several people who started off as Buddhist monks and then got off into some other areas, maybe called awakened awareness or mindfulness, which are all pretty much related. And so especially, I have been, every morning I get up and I listen to a podcast, which leads me through some mindfulness, sitting in quiet, and some theory and some, practice as well. So the thing is, for me, it's just shutting down the mind that's going off and thinking about things and worrying about things and regretting things and just being in the moment, which has sort of become a cliche, but it's, I think, contemplation, whatever you want to call it, is about being in the moment. And in the moment, in order to really be aware of what's happening in the moment, you have to be quiet.
Yeah, that's really good. And so, you share that every morning you spend some time, with that podcast to kind of help you do that. When you're done with that, what do you find that is of value that keeps you coming back to it? Because one of the things, we've been friends for a long time. And so one of the things that I know about you is that if something is not of value for you, you have no problem stopping doing it, right? You're gonna stop doing it. So if this is something you're coming back to, every single day to do it, it has to have a deep value to you. So what keeps you coming back each day to that podcast? What do you find the value?
Good question. To speak of what's of value to me, I have to sort of talk to you about what are my values.
Yeah.
And I guess one of my values is I want to be a good person. Now, I don't know exactly why that is, but I do feel like I want to be a good person. And one of the things that comes out of these of these periods of meditation for me is that it reminds me that I am connected to everything, okay? And that this person that I call myself, this me, this I, is a construct that I've created over a period of time, and it's not really who I am. So when I remember that I'm connected to everything, then I care about everything. And that's just, I think that's it. You could apply that to the environment, you could apply it to animals, but I think it's especially important when you apply it to people. And so it's important to me to be reminded every day that I care about everybody and that I'm nicer to my wife and I'm less irritated by people that I encounter out in the street and in public. And so I think it helps me to be a better person.
Yeah, that's really neat. Yeah, I like that. I think there's a lot of value in that. Would you use the word healing and restorative to that? Like for you, that's a healing thing, that's a restorative thing for you?
Well, those aren't words that I would use, but I certainly think they could apply.
Okay.
I feel rejuvenated.
Okay.
It gets me going for the day.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. I come out of those sessions, and I used to feel this way about just sitting in silence and meditating. Actually, I used to feel this way. I used to get up and read the Bible every morning. Mm-hmm. And if you can believe that.
I do, yeah, absolutely.
And it sort of gives you something to start the day focused on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a part of my experience, you know, with contemplation is I'm Baptist by background, right? So that's the circle I've traveled in, American Baptist churches. But I have really connected well with some of the, like the Jesuits and some of the other Roman Catholic contemplative, yes, you know, pieces of that journey. One of the things that, the Roman Catholic tradition has done very well is they've taught this part of contemplation. They've challenged you to think and to be still and to discern, to meditate. That's not a part of the tradition that I grew up in. We didn't right, talk like that. We failed.
Right.
I guess failed is, it's not too strong of a word. We failed to help people do that. And so I was really drawn earlier in my life to this community that really focused on helping you to be still and to be quiet and to remove distractions. And that in the removing of distractions and that in the stillness and in the quiet, that you could discern the movement of the Spirit of God in your life. You could sense the invitation of the Spirit. And to me, that was, it was life-giving. And it helped me at different seasons in my life when life became overwhelming, I started to wonder if I had the strength or the fortitude to keep moving forward, that to enter into a time of quiet, into a time of silence, and to come out of that and recognize that in the silence and in the quiet, that the Spirit met me there. And, you know, boy, I came out of it, you know, rejuvenated is a good word, right? You know, I came out rejuvenated, I came out restored. I came out with a clear sense of who I was and where the Spirit was inviting me to move into the future. I found that extremely healthy for me. Yeah, it's not something that the majority of churches that we, you know, institutional churches that we think about do well. Like we don't We don't help people do that well. I don't feel. Why do you think that is?
Well, before I try to answer that question, I'll just back up and say that the podcast that I listen to, and I'm not plugging this, but it's Sam Harris, okay? And he has 4 million listeners.
Yeah.
Okay? That's probably larger than the American Baptist Church.
Yeah.
Okay? And so this speaks to the fact that people are looking for something.
Yeah.
Now, why is it that they're going to listen to Sam Harris podcast and not going to church?
Yeah.
I guess it's because, well, for many of them, they've gone to church and it didn't work for them.
Yeah. And see, I think that's right. I think there's a part of that, which is what is like it's touching a need, right? It's helping them get somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we think about spirituality, and because we are all, I believe, you know, that we are all spiritual beings. And so there's a spirituality in all of us. And how do we help people get in touch with that? And how do we help people grow in relationship with that? And I think one of the ways to do that is through contemplation and through finding ways to be still and to be quiet and to be open to the movement of the Spirit of God in your life and in your world. And I think you're right, right? So we don't always do well with that in churches. Sometimes we add more noise to somebody's world rather than helping them discern the Spirit. And that makes me sad.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is a whole nother conversation, but some people might say they don't know what you're talking about when you say discern the Spirit. But I'm not saying that because I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I guess.
So what would you? So let's talk about that.
I want to say that this idea of meditating and of Buddhism ending suffering, it's not just a selfish thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just to make yourself feel better.
Yeah.
I think the goal of Buddhism, when they say to end suffering, it's end not suffering just for yourself, but all suffering. So the other morning I was listening to Sam, and he was doing a loving kindness meditation where you think about another person and you wish them happiness, you wish them joy, you wish them peace, you wish them freedom from anxiety and worry, and then you extend it to a larger group, and then you extend it to all people. And so it's really, it's not just a selfish practice,
yeah.
Which I think is probably what you would say that the Spirit would be calling you to do, or it's very much what Jesus preached is, you know, love your neighbor.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's, you know, to get back to what Richard Rohr's talking about, it's the contemplation, it needs to end with justice, right? And so contemplation for the sake of, you know, I have a friend who says, you know, contemplation is just navel gazing. It's like, well, no, that's not at all. Right?
No.
You know, contemplation, you know, is you contemplate so that you can understand yourself, you can understand the invitation of the Spirit so that you can go and that you can do. And that you can move in the world and bring about positive change and all that. And, you know, to use some of Rohr's words, is that, you know, to be contemplative, you know, is to end up. Let me read this. The true contemplative, the truly spiritual person, then must do justice, must speak justice, must insist on justice. And they do. They always have, and they are. And so that's, you know, that's going to your point there that you were just sharing, that it's not all about you and not about making just your world better. It's as you understand yourself better, as you understand how the Spirit is moving in your world and in your life, there's this invitation to go into the rest of the world and be in relationship, with your wife, with your family, with whoever, with the wider world, and whatever everybody's, you know, connections are, and to live and move and breathe in a different kind of way that is life-giving, not just for you, but right. for everybody right. around you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, about this thing about justice. And I remember there's a verse in Micah of what does the Lord require of thee, O man, to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of what Rohr's talking about. And he's also talking about pretty much it's in the Beatitudes.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's all about, like, I think it's hard for us to do all of that, to do the justice well, without coming out of some kind of contemplation, whatever it's going to look like for each individual, where we understand ourselves more clearly. And where we understand the invitation of the Spirit, in a different kind of a way, because that at that point it becomes more than just doing; it becomes a part of our being, and it becomes a part of a fulfillment of living living the life that we've been blessed with, and making the most of the life that we've been blessed with. If that makes sense.
Yes. So Rohr, in addition to being sort of a contemplative, I think, is he also described as a mystic?
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would describe him that way. Yeah.
So can you say a little bit more about mysticism?
Well, I think, you know, as a mystic is somebody who is just abundantly aware, in tune with the movement of the Spirit of God in the wider world. There's times in which we move through the world and something happens and we'll say, oh, wasn't that a coincidence? You know, oh, wasn't that, you know, this happened, that happened. Well, it's nice that things played out that way. And I think somebody who would be described as a mystic is just believes that the Spirit of God is alive and well and at work in the world and is constantly seeking to see how and where the Spirit of God is working and moving and is aware of that, is sensitive to that, and as they're aware of that, it just it impacts the way that they have relationship with other people.
So, you know, I tend to want to think of things in sort of a biological, chemical, physical terms. And so I have come up with some beliefs that allow me to think of God in those terms.
Yeah.
So help me think of how can I think of the Spirit in those terms?
In what terms? Help me out there.
Sort of a physical, chemical, biological terms.
Physical, chemical, biological.
Because I believe that ultimately, see, I'm a sort of reductionist, that I believe that you had the Big Bang.
Yep.
Okay. And then everything happened after that.
Yep.
Okay. It could all be explained in those terms. So whatever you want to call God, I'm not telling you I don't believe in God.
Yeah.
I just say, well, let's define what you do mean by that. Sure. So help me think about how can I think about the spirit in some terms of other than just saying, oh, this is the Spirit of God.
I think the spirit of God is, for me, as I think about the Spirit of God, the Spirit of God is the gift. You know, when Jesus was here on earth and Jesus had his ministry and Jesus got ready to leave earth, he goes, you know, my Spirit's going to come. My Spirit's going to come and empower you. My Spirit is going to come and guide you. And so that Spirit of God, I believe, is present and alive and well and at work in our world. And And it helps us to discern where God is working and moving. Helps us to see things on levels and in ways that we might not normally want to see and might not normally want to look at. And so for me, paying attention to the still small voice that inside of me that, like, you know, some people will say, well, that's just, I'm searching for the right word, you know, but that's just your conscience.
Yeah.
You know, that's speaking.
Or your consciousness.
Or your consciousness,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
For me, I was like, well, no, that's the Spirit of God.
Yeah. Right,
that is, right. That is speaking,
right,
and
right.
is providing, providing insight, providing direction. And, you know, there's times where, you know, in my own life, where I've been wrestling and I've been struggling with something. And as I've made it a matter of prayer, as I've made it something that I'm really focused on, all of a sudden I have insight into it. You know, something, my thinking changes, mm-hmm. or I have an experience, I have a conversation with somebody else, and in the midst of the conversation, all of a sudden it's like, ooh, the blinders are lifted,
yeah.
You know, and I see it differently.
Yeah.
And for me, I tend to look at that and say, well, okay, you know, that was more than just an epiphany. That's the Spirit of God that is helping me to look at things and to see the world and to see the world differently.
So I don't want to come off as some kind of an atheist here,
yeah.
But C.S. Lewis said about prayer, we don't pray to change God, we pray to change ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay, so these insights that you've had, I don't doubt that you've had them, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure where they came from.
But could it be that it's the Spirit of God that is changing me?
Well, see, this is what I'm asking you to tell me. What is that? Okay. Yeah. So,
let me share this story with
okay.
you. Right. So there was a season in my life. I was the pastor of a church up in Springfield, Massachusetts. And by the world standards, you would look at that church and you would say everything was great and everything was perfect. And we were adding people. The church was growing in size by numbers of people. We had more money coming in every single year. And we were adding staff people. So by the world standards, you took a look at it and it was growing, thriving. And there came a season where all of a sudden I began to really wrestle with this thought that something's not right. Something is not right here. And I couldn't shake it. And I believe that what that was the Spirit of God just saying, look, Dan, something's not right here. And I really began to wrestle with it and I struggled with it. And it became a matter of real prayer for me. And I got to this place after a number of months where I started to pray for one of three things to happen. You know, I said, God, I need you to either show me what's wrong so I can fix it, remove the spirit from me, you know, remove this thought from me so that, you know, it's like I can believe everything's okay because it certainly looks okay from the outside, or release me from here. You know, release me from serving in this place and send me somewhere else. And I prayed like that for a long period of time. And one day I was leaving my house, and as I was stepping over the threshold of my house, I just felt the Spirit of God say to me, you're released from here. So standing on the inside of my house, on the inside of the threshold, inside of the front door, I was really had a heaviness, and I was wrestling with this sense that something's wrong and something needs to be fixed and all this stuff. And honestly, what I was thinking was that, oh, okay, there's one more thing that we need to tweak in the life of this congregation. And once we tweak that, we're going to go off to the races and we're going to hit the next growth spurt. You know, we're going to go from 200 members to 400 members. You know, where this is the next growth thing. But as I stepped over that threshold, the spirit said, I release you from here. And I stood out on my front porch and just said, I have been released from here. And was just all the weight, all the care, all the worry, all of it was gone. Never thought about it again.
And you left.
And I not right away, but okay. I did. Yeah. After a season, right? Okay. After a season. Okay. But I, what happened is I entered into a whole new season of ministry at that church, because I walked, because I started moving in a different kind of way. It's like, you know what? I've been released from here. My time here is not long. Hmm. And so now I'm entering into this and I can move and be in a totally different kind of way. There was a freedom to it. I just really believe that was, you know, that was the Spirit speaking in my life. You know, another time I was about 16 years old and I traveled with the church that I was a part of to Roatan, that little island off the coast of Honduras. Mm-hmm. And I met we were down there doing mission work for a week. And very early on when I got onto to the island, I met a young boy whose mother had just died. His father was in prison. He was living alone. And I started to spend time with him and just really got to appreciate him. And we just really had this connection. So I was really able to help him, get him connected with people on the island who would take care of him. After I left, because I wasn't going to be there, but I was able to connect him with people in the church we were working with who were going to help him, just was really able to do some good stuff for him. And it was probably a day or two before we were supposed to leave. And I was sitting on the park bench across from the church in Cox and Hole, and I could actually take you to that church and I could take you to the park across the street and take you to the park bench. It's still there, at least it was 2 years ago. And I was sitting on that park bench and I was looking at the street in front of me, and all of a sudden these 30 boys, all his age, came running down in front of me. And the thought that the Spirit placed into my mind was, well, you spent a whole week helping this one child, one young guy. What about these 30? Mm-hmm. Who's going to take care of who's going to help these 30? And I was emotionally, spiritually wrecked. I mean, I was just undone. And when people ask me why'd you go into ministry, I go back to that. Yeah. I mean, that's it. That is it. And that's, to me, that's the Spirit. That was the Spirit of God just speaking. And those are two very, in my life, two very dramatic times when that happened, when I've experienced that. Now, that doesn't happen all the time, right? But I think on a daily basis, on a regular basis, as we grow in our ability to be still and to be quiet and to contemplate and to invite, you know, the Spirit to work and to move in our lives, we'll have these leadings, we'll have these promptings, we'll have these invitations, and as we step into those, we'll walk out on the other side of them and say, huh, that was really neat. You know, like you ever have one of those times where you're in a store somewhere and you see somebody and you can tell that they're struggling, and like you're human, like the human busy part of you says, I don't have time to say hello to that person. Mm-hmm. But then there's that prompting inside of you that says, they need something.
Yeah.
They need me to say hello. And then you say hello, and it turns into just this amazing thing. And as you walk away, you realize that you brought a little bit of life, a little bit of hope, a little bit of encouragement into this person's life. You ever have something like that?
Well, I do. And at the same time, it makes you feel good.
Yeah, it right? does, yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that feeling good because...
No.
And I would say that those things like that are, for me, I would look at that. I look at those pieces like that in people's lives and I go, yeah, that is the spirit of God that is just moving. And every now and then we're in touch with it. Every now and then we're in tune with it. Every now and then we pay attention to it. But for a lot of us, we're just so busy and there's so much noise, we miss it so often. And somebody who is contemplative or somebody who we would describe as a mystic is somebody who has trained themselves, who has worked at being still and being quiet, who has worked at being aware of the movement of the spirit in a way that a lot of people we're not. Mm-hmm. And that's to me that's
well here's a question I have for you. I don't doubt that your experience was real.
Yeah.
I've had experiences like that in the past that I might have attributed to that, to the spirit. But how do you explain to an unchurched person how this, who doesn't even know about the Holy Spirit, doesn't even know much about Jesus, how contemplation is going to help them?
I think that we can, a number of years ago, I took a trip with a bunch of college students. And we went to the Dominican Republic. And we went to work at an orphanage. We lived and worked at an orphanage for a week during spring break. And part of my going on that trip, I was interviewed by one of the college student who was in charge of the whole trip to see if I was going to be able to go. And he was concerned that they were going to bring a pastor along with them because it's a spring break trip and didn't want the pastor to be a buzzkill on the spring break trip, right? And so I was interviewed to see if I was going to be acceptable to go on the trip. And, we had a...
You don't have to tell me what you had to do.
Yeah, we had that. We had a conversation. No, it was really good. It was a really good open conversation back and forth. And finally, at one point, I said, look... I said, what you're telling me and what you're asking me without saying it is that you don't want me to preach and that you don't want me to teach and that you don't want me to push upon you my beliefs during this week-long trip.
Okay.
And finally, he just laughed and he goes, yeah, that's it. And I go, that's fine. That's fine. I don't have to, that's fine. I want to go to experience this with you guys. And if I can do that, this is awesome.
Okay.
And he goes, okay. And so we were 5 days into the trip and I was with him. His name was Brian. I was with Brian and with one of the deans from the school. And the three of us were having a conversation and I laughed at Brian. I said, Brian, I said, part of my agreeing to come on this trip is that I told you that I would never preach. I would never teach. I would never do any of that on this trip. And he goes, yeah. And I said, and I haven't. I said, do you mind if for just 5 minutes you let me make a few observations? And he goes, no, go ahead. Because we had become really good friends and we had, and so now I was able to speak out of the fullness of who I am. And I said, Brian, you're just enjoying yourself to the nth degree. Like this, you're coming alive in this place? He goes, absolutely. So Brian, you're sleeping on a concrete floor. Yep. You know, there's no AC. It's, you know, the heat was just like, it was hard to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no screens in the windows.
Right.
So the bugs are coming in. There's no hot water. You know, the toilets, you're hardly flushing them. You know, you're not allowed to flush them all the time. The food is questionable. We're walking everywhere up and down these dirt roads. You're absolutely filthy. There's no TV. And so I just went through a whole long list of things. Like, Brian, like, if I told you before you showed up here that this was going to be your reality, you know, he goes, oh man, he goes, there's no way in the world I would have come.
Yeah.
I said, absolutely. I said, but you're here and you're thrilled. He goes, yeah. He goes, I really am. I said, why is that? He goes, I have no idea. And I said, I'm going to tell you why. You know, so Jesus talks about it and he says, love the Lord with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And you right now are living out of one piece of that. You're loving your neighbor as yourself. And you are just coming alive. And you're experiencing life to the full in an incredible kind of way. And he goes, man, that's absolutely true. He goes, I'm here and I don't care what's around me. And all I'm doing is giving. All I'm doing is sharing. All I'm doing is serving. And he goes, I could stay here for a year. I said, no, you could. You're living out of one half of the invitation of the Spirit. What would happen if you lived out of both halves? Can you imagine how your life would be transformed if you lived out of both halves? If you learned how to be in touch with the Spirit, right? And that's where our conversation ended, because I had permission to speak and that was it. I left it as a question and that was it. But I think that's how I would answer it to people. You know, look at your life and find those places where you come alive, where you feel like, wow, I'm contributing, I'm participating. There's something life-giving in this. And a lot of times it's whenever we're serving, it's whenever we're giving, whenever we're loving our neighbor as ourselves, and that's one half of the invitation. And so, man, what would it be like for you if you learned just a little bit of what it meant to be still and to be quiet and to discern the Spirit's invitation in your life? Imagine how good life could be. That would be exciting to me.
Yeah.
That's how I'd answer it.
Well, that's pretty good. And I think you've answered my question in different ways. I'm left with this desire to understand better what it is, okay? But I will say this. When I tell you that all things are connected, well, what is it that connects them?
What do you think it is?
Well, you would tell me it's the Spirit,
okay? Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, because I want to be able to explain it in terms of chemistry, biology, and physics, okay?
Yeah.
So
and the mystic in me says, hey, I'm fine with it being a mystery. Let the mystery be. And okay, I believe that it is the Spirit.
Yeah.
And that is, and I'm okay with that.
Well, that's great.
I don't understand at all. I'm thrilled when I have the moment just to be able to experience a piece and a part of it.
So that reminds me of a song by Iris DeMent called Let the Mystery Be. So we'll play that sometime.
We'll play that. Okay, yeah, there you go. That'll be it. Well, hey, everybody, thank you for being a part of this conversation between Nick and myself on A Place in the Conversation. And we're glad you're here. I'm glad to have you be a part of it. There will be a link below or in part of the write-up to the podcast that Nick was referring to a little bit earlier. And just as you go through your day, may you just find 5 minutes to sit and be still and to be quiet and to listen and to invite the Spirit to come and to speak hope and life into your being.
Amen.